Welcome to another new episode of the Three Bid League podcast. As always, I'm Tyler, joined by my co-host, Matt. We're going to spend the majority of this episode diving into the mailbag, and a big thank you to everyone who sent us mailbag questions. We got a ton of them, and for the most part, they were all pretty good. Really made us think about them, so we appreciate you guys responding to those. But Matt, as we're recording, we're a few hours past what was really kind of the biggest disappointment of this season. And it's tough to be too down on it because by no means is it a bad loss at all. But St. Louis had a chance to beat Auburn on the road. And that would have been the best win we've seen from an A-10 team in the non-conference in years. But the Billikens blew a 5-point lead and just couldn't score down the stretch.
Just a hard game to watch, Tyler, and the way it happened is so surprising because out of all the ways I would predict St. Louis to blow a game, it wouldn't be missing free throws. This isn't the Billikens of old that were one of the worst shooting teams in the nation. They're actually one of the best now, but they went 1-for-11 from the line in the second half, and I guess the free throw boogeyman made a reappearance. I thought he graduated with Jordan Goodwin and Hassan French, but he still lurks in the St. Louis locker room, apparently.
It was so bad at one point that I was wishing that they could have had French at the line instead of Jake Forrester, who just couldn't find the basket from the free throw line all night long. But yeah, I mean, that was the biggest thing to me. What I actually saw as a huge reason why they lost is they just let Auburn be more physical than them. And Auburn has some great, great big guys who are going to make a difference in March this season. But St. Louis is supposed to be one of the tougher teams in this league and in the country. And while certain guys were throwing themselves around, I mean, Yuri Collins and Fred Thatch were tough as ever in this game, but they just were not playing strong at the rim. They only made 4 threes as a team today. They had to finish in the paint. And the biggest reason why they shot so many foul shots is they had a lot of and one opportunities that just kicked off the rim. And I mean, to me, that was just the biggest thing, is they just were not the tougher team in this game. And when you're the underdog, that can't happen. They had to just finish more, and they had to take away one or two layups that Auburn got because they lost the 3-point battle. And but yet they were still in it.
They were in it. And this game doesn't make me feel any worse about St. Louis. The problem is this is, it's not going to help
Auburn
the resume, though.
Auburn might legitimately be like a top 8 team in the country this year.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, I come out of this game feeling a little bit better about St. Louis for the rest of the year, because I don't expect them to shoot so poorly very often. And what really encouraged me, I thought this was the best defensive game for the Billikens, where they held Auburn without a field goal starting at about the 6 or 7 minute mark. Auburn couldn't get anything going for about 4 or 5 minutes there. And the problem was just St. Louis not taking advantage of that and extending their lead, where they had a couple chances. But I did think on the defensive end, this was much better than what we saw at Mohegan Sun last week. And that was really my area of concern for St. Louis, where I wasn't sure if they were going to be a top half defensive team in the conference. I'm feeling a little bit better about that now. And, you know, we know what they can do on offense. Today they didn't really have it, but I still think in the long term, this is a pretty impressive game for them, and it bodes well for the rest of the year.
Yeah, and now they roll into December. I mean, they basically took care of business in the way they needed to in November. They played those 4 brutally tough non-conference games. They went 2-2. And now in December, they still play 4 more KenPom top 100 teams: Southern Illinois, Iona, Boise State, and Drake. But 3 of those games are at Chaffetz. And it's a chance for them to just kind of clean up in a bunch of low Q2, high Q3 games and really get some momentum going into A-10 play. If these guys come out 11-2, like I know everyone's kind of bummed that they blew this game and there's still a bad taste because Maryland just walloped them. But if they come out at 11-2, they're looking at probably a top 8 seed in bracketology and basically put themselves in a position where, unlike a team that we'll talk about in a little bit, they're going to have some insurance in conference play. They can make some mistakes. They can blow a bad game. They can possibly get swept by one of the better teams in conference. And basically, a top 3 finish in the A10 with what they've done so far this year would be good enough for them to just walk right into a comfortable selection Sunday.
I think so. And it's definitely too early to get into the specifics of bracketology and resumes and quadrants and whatever. But I do think this time of year, whenever you see a mid-major like St. Louis blow a huge opportunity that would surely be a Q1 game, I think we all overestimate what it takes to get an at-large bid. You don't need to win every single big game. And this isn't something that's going to knock St. Louis down at all in the rankings or what have you. It's just a game that would have been nice to have. But like you said, they still have about four or five other big chances coming up where that they can start padding their resume a little bit. And they're certainly not knocked out of any sort of at-large contention. If anything, right now they have a chance to just keep moving up if they win these games that they're going to be favored in.
If they had won this game, we would have started this episode with how high could they get? Like that's the kind of win that you pick up when you're on the path to like a 4 or a 5 seed, depending on what you do later in the season. So, I mean, we've done this pod. This is year 5 now. The only other team that I think has done as much for themselves in November as the Billikens just did is St. Bonaventure last year. Maybe VCU in 19, 2020 when they got that big win over LSU. But
Kind
I
of
mean,
dating that same year, but they didn't really beat anybody. They just won by so many points that it got everyone's attention in Maui.
yeah, I mean, it turned out that neither Virginia Tech nor Georgia was that good that year. Georgia was an abomination, actually. But yeah, I mean, Dayton threw up some antennas, but just in terms of true on paper resume, this is one of the best Novembers we've seen in doing this show. And like I said, we just haven't had teams that going into conference play, we can look at them and say, hey, just don't screw this up and you're good. That was Bonaventure last year, and then they proceeded to screw it up. Although I guess they actually Bonaventure started to go south Thanksgiving weekend because they blew that Northern Iowa game.
Yeah, and I also that St. Bonaventure team last year, like even though they won the Charleston Classic and had some big wins early, they didn't look as good just watching the games. Where looking at it now, they beat Canisius by 9 and struggled through that. They lost to Northern Iowa at home. They gave up 81 to Coppin State. Like they were playing down to their competition, where I don't think this St. Louis team is. I mean, remember, they blew out Murray State on opening night, and that's looking like a decent one. So I just think from the eye test, the St. Louis team seems like they're playing much better than the Bonnies last year, even though the resume might not be quite as strong at this point.
Yeah, and I'll close out with this. I think when I look at what St. Louis has done so far this season, I see a lot more opportunities for improvement. I don't see a specific thing to point to here and say, well, this might be unsustainable. Like, what's really surprising about what they've done in terms of good things? Yuri Collins is scoring more than we're used to, but that's just because he's decided to be a more aggressive scorer. Like, he's basically playing like DeMar DeRozan, where he just dribbles to the foul line, shoots that nice little pull up, and it goes in most of the time. Like, if he wants to keep trying to get that shot, he's going to keep making it. Javante Perkins doesn't look remotely near 100%. Like, if that fixes itself, they're going to be better. Gibson Jimerson is playing nowhere near his A-plus game on the offensive end. If he can get back to where he was at the end of non-con last year, that makes them better. I guess Javon Pickett's a little bit better than we would have expected, but there's no reason to believe anything he's doing is unsustainable. So yeah, I don't see anything fluky with the St. Louis team. I think they're right where they should be, or maybe even a little higher.
I think so. Overall, the Billikens are off to a good start, and I think for the most part, they're about where you would have expected them 7 games in. But another one of the preseason favorites isn't quite off to that hot start. And I've been putting this off as long as I could, but we got some questions about it. I think we need to talk about Dayton going 0-3 in the battle for Atlantis. Just a complete disaster for the Flyers. And now with some injuries that we're not sure about, it's just gonna be, it could be a tough couple weeks in Dayton as they figure out their new rotation. So I guess we can go ahead and just get right into the question. Matt Ryan, one of our good friends we've had on the pod a couple times. This has been a pretty hot topic in the Dayton community about expectations and where this team should go. And he asked us, what logical case is there for Dayton not to be a disappointment compared to preseason ambitions? So, Tyler, I'll let you start. Is there even a case?
Oh, there definitely is. If we want to take this just full, let's go full glass half full mode here. Best case scenario, how do we talk ourselves into this being good? You look at those first three losses. UNLV, they blow it on the road in the second half, midnight to the players' bodies, missing two of your three best players. Wisconsin was a coaching abomination. It might have been Grant's worst performance at Dayton. They just played the wrong offense. Their defense was unbelievable. Their defense deserved to win that game 11 times out of 10. And then everything they did wrong, they adjusted in the second half against NC State. NC State, they're playing Terquavion Smith, who is almost definitely the best NBA prospect they're going to face all year. And he just caused them a lot of trouble defensively. Those quick NC State guards really got to them. Like, I haven't watched an A-10 team with the level of just great quickness and scoring that NC State's backcourt has. And so all three of those games are really, really explainable. And if Dayton was sitting at 5-2 right now instead of 3-4, and we could look at any of those two losses, I think we'd feel fine. It's the fact that they blew all of those games in different ways. And then, like, even with the injuries that came through, you can't blow a 23-point lead to anybody. BYU game was a disaster. But I think even if they find a way to clean up that game, like, things feel a lot better. When they were up by 23, things felt fine. Now, obviously, if they lose Elvis or Malachi for more than 2 months, possibly even the season, they are in so much trouble. But they're still playing really good defense this year. They're still hitting the boards hard. Like, you can't even go through and point out a guy and say, oh, player X has just been abominable this year. A lot of these guys have been abominable on offense, but Holmes is still playing great defense. Kamara is crashing the boards better than he ever has. Like, they all have something kind of going for them.
I agree with you that no individual player has really held them back, but and even some of the games, like we don't need to rehash UNLV again. I know everyone said, oh, like Wisconsin's terrible. Like, how can you lose the game scoring 42 points? Like, Wisconsin's a good team. That's what they do, is make the game ugly. And
Wisconsin is going to be in the tournament this
they've been
year.
a single digit seed all but 1 year since Greg Gard's been the coach. And right before that, they made a Final Four in the last decade. So that's not a bad loss for Dayton. NC State, I'm going to disagree that Dayton was up 10 in the first half and completely lost focus and let the game get away.
Oh, I mean, they should have won that game, but the reasons they lost were just kind of funky.
But I also just think when you're a preseason top 25 team, when you bring everyone back and are expected to make the tournament, at a certain point, the reasons for losing just don't matter, and you need results. You need to get it done. And Dayton hasn't. Now, sitting at 3-4, you could ask any Dayton fan, you could ask any player or coach. The goal would have been to make the NCAA tournament and have a chance to advance. If we're being realistic, even without the major injuries that they just had, those chances look awfully slim now. And I don't really think there is much of a case. The BYU game was just the icing on the cake, where Dayton played one of the worst second halves you're ever going to see. And I think it just sums up the whole week. So I don't think there's any other way to look at this other than a huge disappointment.
It is. I mean, I wasn't trying to argue that it wasn't. Matt's question was, can you still make a case? You definitely can still make a case. And this is where it helps a little bit that they're Dayton, that they're not like Fordham and carrying around that reputation. The reason I mentioned insurance and insurance going into conference play in regards to St. Louis is because Dayton just burned all of their insurance in November. But they got a ton of bye games coming up here in December. If they can keep cleaning those up, if they can go 1-1 in these two tough games against Virginia Tech and Wyoming, then their resume isn't that much different than a bunch of teams that we've seen make the tournament out of the A10 the last few years. But now they have to go 15-3, 14-4, and win the conference. Like they're not in the place that we thought that they could be where they can afford to slip up like St. Louis can. The path's still there. And I mean, part of the reason why I still make this argument, at the end of the Austin Peay game last year, they were playing significantly worse than they are right now. And they still almost made the tournament. Now they had a whole week of wonderful opportunities in front of them. Right now, I'm not picking them to make the tournament, but the pathway is still there. The argument is still there. The talent is very, very much still there. So I think you're a fool to just completely write them off as people are doing. But we'll see. That Virginia Tech game's coming in 10 days. We're going to learn a lot there. If they can hang around in Blacksburg, then there's still a lot of hope.
I think there might be, although if there is a path for Dayton, it's just awfully narrow and awfully long. And I do think it's silly to write them off and talk about what they need to do to make the tournament, because at this point, that shouldn't be the concern. The concern should just be getting back to playing better basketball, especially on the offensive end, where, I mean, there's a multitude of problems. I'd say the biggest one is that Dayton has gone from one of the best 3-point shooting teams in the A10 to maybe the worst. And you would hope that's something that corrects itself a little bit once Kobe Bryant gets back in the lineup, hopefully here soon. But you're right. I mean, there's absolutely no insurance now. And I just think the bigger concern, you talked about how they could still go 14-4 or 15-3 and maybe sneak back into the picture by the end of the year. They just haven't done anything to convince me that 15 wins is possible in the A10. And that's what they're going to need to prove over in December as we get toward conference play. But keeping on with Dayton, so our good friend Ghosty asked us, assuming Malachi Smith and Kobe Elvis are out for an extended time with both of them having suffered leg injuries against BYU, what is Dayton's ceiling? So say both those guys are out until January or February, where can this team go?
So I'm just going to assume in this scenario that at least one of them is back by the time they play their A10 opener. Because if they're missing both of them, their ceiling's like seventh because they're just not going to be able to survive conference play with no guards. Like, just think about playing VCU's presser. Even in the opening game, the amount of pressure that Duquesne will put on Charv Jomps and Kobe Brea if they have to handle all the guard duties. Let's say they have one of them back in January. They get the other one back on the back end of January, early February. The ceiling's still somewhere around a double bye. Once again, they're still going to have to prove a lot to me in these next 3 weeks for me to predict it, but the ceiling is still third, fourth in the conference. They're still one of the three best defenses in this conference. Holmes will get it going at some point. Kamara's not going to continue to shoot the ball as abominably as he has. Kobe Brea coming back is going to give them a ginormous spark. So, yeah, I mean, I'd say the ceiling's probably somewhere second, third, fourth. If those guys aren't healthy, they're not beating St. Louis. I'll go on the flip side and say the floor might be somewhere in like the 9-10 range. Even their worst case scenario, I still don't think they're a pillow fighter.
I don't think so. And I think we'll find out a lot this week where Dayton has, I hesitate to call any game easy after last year's disaster,
Two
but
bottom 50 teams.
they have two bye games against Western Michigan and Southeast Louisiana coming up. And I think we'll find out an awful lot based on how Mike Sharvejumps plays. because he really is the only true healthy guard on the roster right now until Kobe Brea gets back. And my just big concern, I feel like Dayton lost the two players who can take someone off the dribble and drive to the basket from the 3-point line. And we haven't really seen Charv Johnson do that. Even though he's got great passing skills, most of his value's been as a 3-point spot-up shooter. And he's going to have to take more charge, have the ball in his hands a little bit more, and make more of those tough plays. If he's not able to do that and lead this offense, Dayton could be terrible until these guys get back. So I think we'll get our answer in a couple of games, but we just need to see how the Flyers play without these guys. It's really hard to say right now.
Yeah, and we'll see, because the guy, the Charv jumps that we saw against Lindenwood and in the first half against both SMU and UNLV is a guy that you can play him at point, especially against a bad team like a Western Michigan, and you should be able to coast through that game. He showed us some of that off the dribble push. He ever since he walked out of the game with two fouls against UNLV, he has not looked the same. So we'll see. His confidence looked a little bit off. Now he's got to be the guy. He's certainly good enough to do it. And last thing on those games, just something to, for people to watch out for. Old A-10 friend Lamar Norman is the leading scorer for Western Michigan. He is second in the country right now in percentage of his team's minutes played, behind none other than Darryl Banks III on St.
Hey. All
Bonaventure.
right, there we go. Another, I feel like every episode we're gonna have a where he at for Duquesne since they've had
Yeah, because
so many
everyone just
transfers.
leaves and they're all actually good and like playing big minutes for wherever they went to.
Hey, how about Sincere Carey's Kent State took Houston down to the wire the other day? I don't think he played very well, but he's still out there too.
MAC preseason player of the year.
Wow. All right. All right. Well, we can move on, I think. That's enough Dayton talk for me. It's going to get sad real quick if we keep going. So we'll go over to a great question from our friends, West Pine Bills. And I thought this was interesting because with so many new players in the league, we really didn't know what to expect from a lot of players. And they asked us, who has surprised you so far in their performance or how a player has been utilized so far this year? And I have a lot of them really, mostly when it comes to the newcomers. I guess to start off with the St. Louis guys, since they asked the question, I really didn't expect Javon Pickett to average 8 rebounds a game, since that's about twice his career high. That's been interesting. And I'd say overall, you hit on it earlier, but he has been a little bit more of an impact player than I thought.
I think the single biggest one in the entire conference for me, and there's some guys further down the pecking order that we'll talk about later that relate to some other questions, but in terms of how they've been utilized, how about Yuri Collins,
Yeah.
who is no longer the somewhat timid pass first, pass second, pass third guy we've seen all of his career? He's putting the Billikens on his back right now. He's amazingly actually only second in scoring. I thought he had more points than Jimmerson. At least that's what the eye test told me. But he is just so clearly by far the most important guy to St. Louis in a way that I just didn't think was going to happen. I thought him, Perkins, and Jimmerson would all carry kind of somewhat even loads on the offensive end. But he has just gone all out in being their best player, and he's had to be. He's doing this out of necessity. This is not a selfish performance.
Yeah, I think that's the key is that he's taking a lot more shots than we're used to, but it's working for St. Louis. It's not hurting them at all. And I think that has made him one of the most valuable players so far. Another guy too that's really been leading his team in usage that I didn't expect based on what he's done the rest of his career is Brandon Johns going over from Michigan to VCU. And overall, he was pretty much just a role guy for 3 years with the Wolverines. Now, especially with Ace Baldwin being injured the last couple games, he's taken a lot more responsibility for the Rams offense, and he's done it with a lot of efficiency too. Overall, this has definitely, I think, been the strongest start to his career. He's doing a lot more work inside the paint than we're used to seeing, where in Michigan, a lot of his shots came from beyond the arc. That hasn't really been the case this year. And Overall, I feel like VCU's gotten an awful lot out of him, where if Johns wasn't one of their best players, they could really be struggling even more without Ace in the lineup.
Yeah, that's another great one. I mean, we can dive into a few of the lower teams in the conference. I think one of the other just kind of interesting ones to me is Khalid Moore at Fordham. We obviously didn't know a ton about him, wasn't playing that much in Georgia Tech, but they're working him through the offense at a pretty similar rate as to what they relied on Chuba Ohams for last year. Now, it's a very different game. They're relying more on Abdu Simbilla to give them kind of that interior toughness that Ohams brought to their offense. Moore is more of a floor spacer, a little bit of a slasher, but I just didn't expect him to be just the clear number two, second most important guy in the Fordham offense this year.
I think so. Yeah, that's a good one too. I guess going the other way, with some guys who maybe aren't utilized as much as I was expecting. And this is always tough, especially with freshmen, but I really thought we were going to see more Justin Fernandez for George Mason. And
I'm kind of not stunned on that one though.
well, what stuns me
Because
though,
Bailey's been the one guy who's actually playing great for them, and that's the guy who's kind of blocking them.
Well, but my concern though is just when you have a top 100 recruit, the only reason I would expect him not to be playing is if the team's really good. And George Mason is not really good right now. So the fact that they have someone that talented that still can't get off the bench on what has been one of the lowest performing teams in the conference, I'm curious, especially with him being on the team last spring and practicing earlier than some of these true freshmen. And then the other one is, I think we talked about it last week real quick, but Bryce Golden just went from being someone we thought would be one of the biggest impact transfers of the year, and he's coming off the bench playing about 10 to 15 minutes a night for, again, a struggling Loyola Chicago team.
Yeah, well, unfortunately for Loyola, he's just not at a spot where they need to play him more. Because two of the guys I thought of for this answer were Thomas Welch and Philip Alston, who have been basically Loyola's two best players so far this season. Both have just been far more important than we could have imagined coming into the year. And I'll throw in one other one in terms of freshmen, RJ Louise, who is just wildly inconsistent, the freshman over at UMass. But they have really highlighted him early on and given him an opportunity to try to shine. I thought he'd be a bench player for that team, and on certain nights, he is clearly their second or even best player in some of these games.
So one more guy I'll throw out, and this segues into another question we have, but Chad Venning at St. Bonaventure playing really well as their center. I was skeptical when they brought someone from Oregon State, but he's averaging 11 and 6 so far.
By the way,
And
didn't even play that much in the season opener.
no, he didn't. So I wasn't sure what to expect from him, but he's been solid. But Mike asked us, what's the Bonnie ceiling after their big win against Notre Dame on a neutral court? And then Eric also chimed in by asking, why did we underestimate the Bonnies so badly a few weeks ago? So, Tyler, I think we both picked St. Bonaventure 12. Are we just idiots for doubting Mark Schmidt?
No, I mean, this team just looks better than we could have projected them to. And guess I'll tie this into another question too, and you can kind of jump on this after. Ben Kloss asked us if you could change your preseason prediction for one team up or down, who would it be? And my answer right now is the Bonnies. They should just be higher than 12th in anyone's projections at this point. But even after the first week of the season, we couldn't be sure that they were better than that. I mean, they did not look that great against St. Francis. They lost that game to Canisius. Nobody saw this Venning thing coming, what he did against Notre Dame, until he actually did it against Notre Dame, where he was the best player on that court for a good chunk of that game. In terms of the ceiling, I guess the ceiling is somewhere in the 3-4 range, getting a double bye. I don't feel comfortable at all saying that. I think very logically they can get themselves into 5, 6, 7, finish a little bit below that. But to me, the reason I'm a little skeptical that they can be as good as everyone's hyping them up to believe is I'm not sure what Darryl Banks does the rest of the season. He's been an unbelievable scorer for them. He's hovering right below 20 points a game, but he's outrageously inefficient. And for St. Bonaventure to be a top four team, for them to be in the hunt for a conference title, he can't continue to shoot at 37% because Mark Schmidt's going to keep highlighting him as the key focal point of their offense. Now, if Banks can prove to me that he can be an efficient leader, or if the rest of the team's just so good that Banks's usage rate just goes down, then maybe they can get there. But they're certainly deserving of being in the discussion for the top half now. And they
I think
sure as hell are
absolutely.
not the 12th best team.
No, they're going to be way better than that. And what gets me excited about the Bonnies, I think we knew, even with a completely new roster, I think we knew Kyrell Luke and Darryl Banks were both going to be heavily involved in that they'd be scoring a lot of points, which they are. But defensively, this team's been quite a bit better than I was expecting. And right now, they're 89th in KenPom defensive efficiency, actually a little bit higher than last year's St. Bonaventure team with all the seniors. And they're also blocking a ton of shots. They're top 50 in the country in block rate, mostly due to Venning, but they've also got Anquan Hill, Jan Farrell, and a couple other big bodies in there playing good interior defense. So I feel like they could definitely end up being a top 100 team. I mean, right now they're just outside that mark. And you can't say that. I would say right now in the A10, there's very few teams. Maybe St. Louis is the only one where you can guarantee they're going to be a top 100 team the rest of this season. And so that could put St. Bonaventure in the top four discussion. I think it's more likely they finish in the middle of the pack in that like 5 through 8 range, but you never know. I mean, we saw it a couple years ago where St. Bonaventure had a bad non-conference and worked their way up to fourth. This year, they're already having a much better non-con with the Notre Dame win, so I could definitely see a double bye in the cards. But they have to probably figure out something with the offense, like you mentioned, where either someone else is going to have to step up or Banks is going to need to be more efficient.
Yeah, and if conference play was starting tomorrow, I'd put them somewhere in the 8 to 10 range, which is probably a little bit lower than I think consensus would be, especially coming off this big win. But if you're asking me to predict one way or the other, I'd take the better end of that. And the biggest reason is because Jan Farrell and Barry Evans both have just a ton of talent. And weirdly, Bonaventure got like their two best freaky leapers in the same year. Like, those dudes can sky. This is not St. Bonaventure recruiting class levels of athleticism from those two. But the more I watch, the more I become convinced that one of them is going to have a massive breakout conference season. I think right now, I'd probably lean towards Jan Farrell. I think Evans probably has the higher long-term ceiling, but Farrell's just a way steadier player right now. And he's already a monster on the glass. He's top five in the A10 in rebounding so far. But one of those two guys is going to come through in a big way and help to take a little bit of that burden off the guards. So.
Yeah, more with less. I don't think we know who it's going to be yet, but I think you're right that those two freshmen we should keep an eye on. And I'd be surprised if neither of them made the all-rookie team when it's all said and done, because they're both getting a lot of minutes now. So something to watch. But rolling back into Ben's question on if we could change our preseason prediction, who would it be? Honestly, with this question, I just looked at what we knew in the preseason, what I should have looked at differently. And when it came to St. Bonaventure, I have no regrets picking them 12th. There was no way to know if this was an A10 caliber roster, so I didn't know what to do with them. Really, I had two that looking back on, I think I misjudged. One in the good direction and one where I under or where I overrated a team. But with Richmond, I picked them 9th. I think that was clearly too low based on what we've seen. And I think I overreacted to them losing a lot of key seniors, but forgot about how They were putting a lot of solid transfers around one of the most talented players in the conference, Tyler Burton, and adding in Jason Nelson, who, as I was hoping for and maybe even expected, he has been the best freshman in the league so far. I should have had them as a top half team, and that's a regret. The other one for me is George Mason, who I picked fifth with a pretty darn similar roster to last year. And I'm just not sure I should have moved them up so high after they suffered a pretty up and down season and ended up in ninth place last year. I think that might have been a little bit of wishful thinking that everyone on the team would have improved, and it just hasn't really happened for the Patriots.
Yeah, and I think for most people, the two big ones are Loyola and Duquesne. We both had Loyola a whole notch lower than the consensus. I had them at seven, and then I had the Dukes at nine. And right now, I certainly want to swap those two over those two spots, but I've watched every Duquesne game so far. I'm still not sold on them as a double bye team, largely because we just haven't seen them play that caliber of competition yet. And sadly, we're not really going to until A-10 play. They just play a lot of teams that would be finishing somewhere between like 8th and 11th in the A-10, and then Kentucky. Loyola, there's still enough talent there and enough flashes that I don't feel like there's some sort of lock for the pillow fight. I'd probably pick them 10th or 11th right now, but that's a team that I would really be fearful of putting too low because they're going to put something together this year. It's a matter of do they put together enough to still get into the top half, or do they put together enough that they just don't end up in the basement?
Yeah, and I know the A-10 also gave Loyola a really difficult schedule. I think they have home and homes with St. Louis, Dayton, and maybe VCU
They
also.
do. Yep. And
So they could
Davidson,
be
I
someone's
think, is their
landmine,
fourth one.
which, yeah, because they're going to be a, they could easily be a Q4 game, or maybe probably Q3 is more likely, but they're not going to have very good rankings by the time we get to conference play. But you mentioned Duquesne as a team that pretty much everybody misjudged. And so we'll roll that into a couple more of our questions. Ghosty and Drew asked us pretty much the same question, which was, can Duquesne go for a double bye? And what's their ceiling going to be this year?
Yeah, they can. I think their ceiling is right around sneaking into a double bye. They're not a title contender quite yet. But it all just starts with the fact that Day-Day Grant right now is far and away the best shooting guard in the A-10. And unless we see, I guess technically Jimmerson is St. Louis's shooting guard. Who the hell knows?
Positionless
If,
basketball.
yeah,
I
if we're
don't
going to
know.
start pigeonholing the Billikens into positions, whoever their shooting guard is, if that guy hits their ceiling, can be better than Day-Day Grant. But if that doesn't happen, he's the best at his position in the league. He is the best pure scorer Duquesne has had since before the Ron Everhart era, when Brian McAllister was there. They've had great all-around guards. They had Micah Mason, who was an incredible shooter, but just a dude who can get a bucket from absolutely anywhere. Day-Day Grant's the best at it. And by the way, he's also quite unselfish. He's kind of their backup point guard. He doesn't really play that role, but he's a good ball mover for how much he scores. And with a guy like that, that basically puts you in the top half right then and there. They are deep as hell. I have no idea who their second best player is. Right now, if we went and tried to figure out like all conference predictions, I'm not sure they have another guy who's even in the all conference discussion. But when it's bench unit against bench unit, they're going to be slapping people this year. Their role guys are just better than other teams' role guys. And the two biggest things for me, Tevin Brewer, who was supposed to be their second best guy, their starting point guard, has just not played well so far this season. He also has been very open about the fact that he physically still feels off after his appendectomy. So he's going to get better as the year goes on. And then they have a guy that we have not even seen this year. And I'm going to butcher the name, even though I heard a bunch of people say it this week. But Khalil Barre, he's a 6'9 freshman. He's been out with an injury this entire year. He's played a little bit in practice in his time on campus. And from what I've started to hear, he's been their best center when he was on the court. So no one knows when he's going to be back. It seems like he should be there for A10 play, but they might have a whole nother weapon to add to this rotation that we haven't even seen yet. So the ceiling's pretty high. The floor's also still fairly low, but the ceiling's very high.
I think so, and it's definitely been a more enjoyable brand of Duke's basketball this year, and agreed with all your points on Day-Day Grant. He's been one of the best newcomers to the league. But my question on if Duquesne can make the top four, it all lies with their defense. And as it stands right now, if they don't get better on the defensive end, then I think the answer is no. Right now they're giving up 41% from three, which is even a little bit worse than last year when they were one of the worst perimeter defensive teams in the conference. And the other thing interesting me, which I don't know how sustainable it's going to be, but they're getting absolutely killed on the defensive glass. One of the worst defensive rebounding rates in the country, but they're also getting a ton of offensive rebounds. And I don't know if this has just been a philosophy decision by Keith Van Brott that they're going to crash the offensive boards really hard and try to get out in transition. But I just don't know how that's going to hold up once Duquesne starts playing better opponents in the A-10. Are they going to keep getting away with getting so many second chance points and sacrificing defensive rebounds?
Yeah, well, the offense, crashing the offensive glass is definitely a strategic decision. And a big part of that is just because Austin Wrochław and Trey Williams are both so good at it. Defensively, I don't think they'll ever be a great defensive rebounding team, but they should at least be somewhere around average. And Joe Reese being out these last few games has really hurt them in that department. They got pummeled on the boards against Alabama State. If they were completely healthy in that game, that just wouldn't have happened. So the injuries have kind of mucked up that number a little bit. The three-point defense is a little bit concerning, and we saw it in the North Florida game where the Ospreys just hung around the whole time because they were getting a ton of good three-point looks. Now, the reason for optimism, they weren't exactly getting open. There was some bad defensive breakdowns in the first 10 minutes of that game, but then it basically turned into just a heat check fest. But it's happened enough, and there's been enough teams making contested threes against the Dukes so far that that is a huge red flag. And that's why their floor is still so low. Because this might be a bad defense. I don't think it is, but the door's still open for that.
That's what I'm going to keep an eye on. And I think 3-point defense is always one of the hardest things to measure, especially in a small sample size where I think Duquesne's played, what, 6 games. So
Yep.
we'll have a better picture of that
And
by the
one of them,
time
they
we
got
do.
destroyed by Kentucky. So it's
Yeah,
kind of
that one,
tough with
I'm
that
not going
one.
to hold that against Duquesne. So we'll have a better idea in January, I think. But right now, I'm not sold on their defense enough to say top four, although still way better than anyone except for you maybe expected this year. I think even better than you
It
expected,
is.
probably.
Yeah, it is. I mean, someone else had them ninth. I can't remember who. I think it was one of the three-man weave guys. No one else had them above that. Not a
Am
chance.
10th, I think. Pretty good. But that question required a lot of thought. So we'll go with a quick hitter here from Carter Chapley, who asked us if one Canadian school could join the A-10, besides St. Bonaventure, of course, who would it be and why is it, I'm going to butcher this, Wilfrid Laurier? I don't know, I'm not Canadian, but they went 11-7 last year, so that's not terrible. They might not be the worst A-10 team. They might be Loyola. Oh,
Sorry, Carter, it's McGill.
okay.
They've had a history of playing a bunch of Division I teams in exhibition season. They give the A10 the Montreal market. I'm sure USA Network would love to be able to get into the households there. Their place in snowy Quebec allows us to make fun of not just Bonaventure, but a second team for being impossible to get to. I definitely think the A10 fans would pretend like Montreal is just some small mountain town in the middle of nowhere. And it helps us to be a more bilingual conference. Imagine the French recruits that teams like Davidson or Duquesne, who are starting to recruit internationally, could appeal to with a trip to Montreal to go play in French Canada, to go be in front of your same language speaking brethren. It's got to be McGill. And not just because that's the only college in Canada that I know someone from high school went to.
Well, and the one thing too, in my very limited research into Canadian college basketball, some of these teams start their seasons really early. Like they were playing exhibition games in September, getting the season rolling in October. I know everyone complains about how like the first week of the college basketball season sucks and there's no top 25 games, but I'm all in favor of this. Let's move the season up, get it started earlier, play more games. I love it. I hate waiting until the beginning of November, so I am in favor of that. But speaking of some international basketball, we got a question from David asking if there was any correlation between Davidson's strong play since the start of the World Cup and the fact that this is the least international flavor rotation we've had in a while. And I didn't realize it, but that is a good point. Besides Sam Enenga, does Davidson have any internationally born players?
I'm not in the rotation right now. There's that Icelandic dude who's hurt that's supposed to be playing, but
yeah. I hope that's not something that goes away with Matt McKillop, because that's always been awesome with Davidson. I mean, they just lost Luka and Hyungjoon Lee last year, but that's always been fun, and I hope they keep the international flavor.
I actually wonder if that's a little bit of a residual COVID fluke. That
could be.
For 2 years, they basically couldn't scout internationally in person. And so this would be the class where that would really kind of suffer. That yeah. You just didn't have data on the guys who are coming into college this year. But to answer the question, no, I don't think there's a direct correlation. But I definitely think that the lack of international flavor certainly doesn't hurt right now. Think about it. This is a united locker room now. They either just absolutely do not care that the World Cup is happening, or they all get to be disgusted together that Team USA doesn't play aggressive enough offense. There's no division here. Like, there's no one sitting on the bench thinking, oh man, Hyungjoon Lee just will not shut up about Seung-Hyun Min and how great South Korea is going to be this year. We don't have to hear about Luka Brejkovic lament the fact that Austria didn't even make it. Now everybody's all on the same page. I mean, even Sam Enenga probably jumped on the Team USA bandwagon since New Zealand's not in it this year. He's probably joining in with his teammates. He seems like a good guy in that way.
All right, I'm glad that one of us is knowledgeable about the World Cup and could answer that question. That's pretty good. So I think now we'll wrap it up. We have a couple more questions just on the overall state of the conference, some own like all conference type teams. And so let's start out with UMass Fan 33. We've already talked about some of these guys, but he wanted us to build our current all portal team with A10 newcomers. And as we always do, it's not just the five best players, but we'll provide a starting five here. So I'll let you start it off if you're ready.
All right, I'll start this off by saying this was my favorite question that we got in this whole batch. I spent way too much time on this. I think I could have put together a whole 12-man roster of good candidates for this. But the first two names that immediately came to mind, Day-Day Grant, obviously, who has just far and away just been the best player among the transfers. And then Javon Pickett, who, if we're putting together a starting five, I want that dude in my starting five right now. He's going to give me a little bit of scoring. He's going to give me a ton of rebounding. He's going to give me some good defense and a lot of positional flexibility. So having him on here lets me go in a lot of different ways. So then the next thing I got to do, let's just go grab a point guard. That's really just a two-man battle, but it's a tight one. I'm going to downgrade Breon Freeman right now. I think if we answer this question again in February, it's his spot. But he started out the season slow. He had that weird, I guess, suspension that kept him out there. He's really getting it rolling now, but I cannot ignore what Kyrell Luke has done so far this year. And He is just the quintessential modern point guard that you want. He'll take enough shots, 16 points a game, but more importantly, 6.2 assists a game. That's top 20 in the country right now. And he seems like a guy who's really gotten his teammates excited. I want him as the floor general on my transfer team. And then with those three, you can go a lot of different ways. I guess I'll take Victor Bailey Jr. as the next guy. His contributions have gone unnoticed in the midst of George Mason's horrible season so far, but he basically is just a smaller Deshaun Schwartz. He's a good all-around guy, someone who's going to be able to put the ball into the bucket, someone who should be in the all-conference conversation come March if he can just continue to score at the same rate. And then that last spot is where it got really, really tough. Because there's a whole lot of big men who are in the battle for basically fifth best transfer in the league so far. And I could have gone with Philip Alston. I could have gone with Khalid Moore. Could have gone with Matt Cross and just gone small and just tried to outshoot everybody. But it's the unsung hero of the Myrtle Beach Invitational Champions, Wildens Levesque, who, my God, is he tough. Very good defender, great rebounder. I have no idea if he'll ever actually put together that three-point shot that we keep hearing he's working on, because he's tried it. It doesn't look great, but everything else about his game is awesome. He's the glue to this team. He's my big rebounder, and I'll throw him in at my center position. So Levesque, Bailey, Pickett, Grant, Luke.
All right, that's a pretty good roster, and I ended up pretty similar. I had the same backcourt. Really wanted to throw Jason Nelson on there, just since I've been a fan from the beginning.
Oh,
But
I didn't even consider freshman for this.
I know he said all newcomers, so I considered him. But Kyrie Duke's just been a little bit better so far. It is going with kind of a small ball lineup. You're pretty much playing three guards there. So my next two guys, I did have Matt Cross. Just. It's the ceiling for him, where I think by the end of the year, he might be one of the best players in the conference if he just keeps getting better. And then my last one, I wanted a versatile defender, a guy that can play inside and out and guard pretty much any position on the court. And I think that's Brandon Jones Jr. at VCU, where VCU's done it at times this year. I think you can get away with playing him as a small ball five, and he'll get enough rebounds and contest enough shots that you can make it work. So Levesque would have been a good choice there, but decided I had to get a VCU player on the list.
Yeah, I like Johns as well. He would certainly be on my second unit.
And so, speaking of these players we called out, I think this next question from Jay Catsby kind of rolls into it. Have any players moved onto the all rate or onto the radar for all conference? And I would say pretty much everyone we mentioned. I don't know if any of them were preseason all conference, but all of them feel like they'd have a chance right now. Did you have anyone else that you wanted
I mean, like
to
some of
bring up
those guys,
here?
like I counted Day-Day Grant, Victor Bailey being on the radar.
Yeah.
Like they were guys that we talked about. I put them both as honorable mention for me, which was basically me predicting third team since the A-10 still thinks there's six guys on a basketball court. But I'll let you jump into this one. I got a whole bunch of names I'll rattle off. I want to see if how many of them, if any, do you mentioned.
Yeah, so I think I really have three returning guys that I think I didn't consider at all before the season, but have
As
moved
do
onto the
I have the
radar.
same number. I'm intrigued now.
Well, to the problem though, where I don't know if any of my guys are going to make it, they're all just on really bad teams. And it's Ish Leggett, Brendan Adams, and Khalil Brantley, all just playing much better than they have earlier in their careers, leading their teams in scoring. Or I think Adams is behind Bishop, but still scoring a ton of points. I just don't know if their teams are going to be good enough where they can make it on the second or third team by the end, but all of them having great seasons.
I wanted to bring up Brendan Adams and Ish Leggett. So those were two of my three. I think it's the same thing. Like their teams just kind of stink, and they're both just not the best player on their team. Like those are James Bishop and Breon Freeman's teams, but Ish Leggett's a guy. Let's file this away right now for next season. If Rhode Island has a better front court and they're a top half team next year, I think if Breon Freeman, Ish Leggett backcourt could definitely be a double all conference unit because I love the way that those two fit together right now, but they just don't have enough talent around them. For me, the other guy, and this is specifically on the radar, he's nowhere near right now, but I'm going to keep my eye on it because I think he could have a big breakout coming here in December or January. And that's Jaden Deloach over at VCU, who's just playing some great ball right now. Like Brandon Johns is getting the accolades right now, but Deloach just looks so much better than last season. He scraps like hell for every rebound. Something I would encourage people to watch the next time you see VCU. Just watch the ball go up and watch Jaden Deloach's hands. Because if he doesn't grab the ball, you better damn well believe he's tipping it. He might have the most active hands of anyone in the conference. And this is what young Ashuna Shunahi used to do. He was just attacking the ball at all times. And Deloach does that. He's vicious on the pick and roll. He's struggling to do it right now without Ace because he doesn't have the proper partner to play that game with. But I think he's just going to keep getting better as the year goes on. And he's someone I'm really going to keep an eye on for this season and especially for next year. But other than that, it's a whole bunch of transfers. It's guys that we just kind of didn't see playing so well this early on. And just the big, like Javon Pickett's a great example. I think he's been St. Louis's second best player so far this year. Like he certainly has a chance to be an all conference guy, and I think he's an all November guy. The biggest one we already mentioned though, it's Kyrell Luke. Like to me, he's just surefire in one of those spots right now. I think he's better than Daryl Banks, actually. The
Probably has
stats
been so
don't
far.
say it, but the watch it, like everyone's gonna keep praising Banks because he's the scorer. But Luke is so efficient. He's 42% from the field. He's 5'11". He's shooting 48% from three. That's jacking it up. But he's the glue to St. Bonaventure. And if they are anywhere near that ceiling of a potential double bye team, it's only happening because Kyrell Luke is a first or second team all conference guy.
I think so. Those are all good answers, but unfortunately, we also got a question to kill the vibe a little bit, and that is to give our all disappointment teams, or sorry, our first team all disappointment. And unfortunately, I think a lot of these are going to come from the teams, the Loyolas, the George Masons, the Daytons that have let us down a bit so far. And I can start it out here. I think for Loyola, you have to go with Braden Norris and Bryce Golden. Just when it comes to Norris, he is the point guard of the worst turnover team in the country right now and just hasn't gotten his 3-point shooting figured out yet. I think that's going to correct itself eventually, but so far it just hasn't been working. And then Golden, like we already mentioned, not playing nearly as much as I thought. He was averaging double digits for Butler throughout his career and isn't coming close to that now. I think for George Mason, you could go a couple different ways. Josh Oduro certainly hasn't been the player of the year candidate we had hoped for, but I threw in Ticket Gaines to this spot just because both of us thought he could be an all-conference player. Right now, he's only averaging 5.6 points per game, and his turnover rate's almost three times what it was last year. So he's unfortunately taken a step back so far. Another guy, too, on the wings that I was particularly high on was Malik Martin at Rhode Island, and he just simply hasn't had a big impact. He's shooting under 30% in what has been a disastrous offense for the Rams. And my last spot, I hate bringing this up and kicking him while he's down, but Malachi Smith's only played four games for Dayton, and we don't know when we're going to see him back. But to be blunt, they were four pretty bad games, and he just didn't run the Dayton offense well enough for them to come away with a win in the battle for Atlantis.
Yeah, so I have a few of the same. I kind of split them into two different ways. First off, just the guys that I had on all conference, they're just simply not there. And I ignored both Malachi Smith and Javonte Perkins because of the injury recovery. Like Malachi Smith just he didn't look himself. And maybe the ankle is still a significant, well, ankle's certainly a problem now, but maybe the ankle was still a significant problem throughout that tournament. So I just I'm just throwing a big asterisk next to his name. For me, Josh Okoro has been by far the most disappointing guy. This is someone being talked up as a potential player of the year, as someone who might take the next step up to become an NBA player. He's at 12-6. And that's the biggest reason why George Mason has stunk to start the year. Because if he was carrying them in the way that he was in some of those dark games in January last year, then they would have beaten somebody down in the Virgin Islands. But he basically disappeared for most of those games. Other guys that were supposed to be great coming into the year, Brayden Norris, same thing. It's a bummer. He has just not figured out how to cope with this lesser roster. He was the perfect glue for a great roster the last two seasons, but having to be the guy has just not come easily to him. He'll start shooting better from three, but we'll see how much of a contribution he can make for what could be a bad team. Another one I want to kind of sneak in that I think is flying a little bit under the radar is Jaden Nunn, who has actually increased his scoring, and he's actually increased all of his stats across the board, but he's not been good with Ace Baldwin out. And for him to be the guy that we were predicting coming into the season, that the coaches were predicting, they put him on the preseason all-conference team as well. He has to run this offense in Ace's absence to at least an acceptable level. And the simple fact of the matter is that without Baldwin in the lineup, their offense has just been putrid. And Nunn has been a big reason why. He's at 31.5% from three. He's not even shooting well from the free throw line. So I've been a little bit bummed. I was hoping that he could have carried them these last few weeks, and it hasn't happened. And then on the lower end, you threw out Bryce Golden. I'm going to go with St. Thomas, who the Loyola coaching staff was happy to just hype him up to anyone who would listen. He's at 5.5 points a game and has not been that good of a defender. He's someone that when you watch the Ramblers play, you kind of forget he's on the court. I kept mixing him up with a bunch of other of their wings the first few times I watched until I finally figured out his jersey number. And then because there has to be a Dayton Flyer on this list. But like I said earlier, as great as we thought Daron Holmes would be, he's still having an awesome defensive season, even though he struggled offensively. I almost put Tamani Kamara, but he's averaging 11 boards a game. And that's kind of the one steadying thing that Dayton does have. I ended up going with RJ Blakeney, who has not been quite the same on the defensive end. And because of that, it's made it easy for Anthony Grant to just take him out offensively. He's shooting around 10% from three, and he's his normal timid self on that end. He's not being aggressive at all. And when we try to piece together how does Dayton get back to being a respectable, if not good, three-point shooting team, it involves RJ Blakeney being above average in the mid to high 30s, taking three to four of those shots a game, not being where he's at right now, taking one and a half a night and just shooting them at a terrible level.
Yeah, and I feel like for him too, like he's always been timid with shot selection, but even in the NC State and BYU games, he pulled up for a couple deep threes that weren't in rhythm, and it just seems like he hasn't been comfortable in the flow of the offense this year. So, yeah, I mean, no disagreements there with your picks. We'll finish up with a couple rapid fires here. Keith asked us who is the most cringiest starting five graphics, and he also attached all of them, which was quite impressive. So thank you. And why is it a battle between the Spiders and LaSalle? Well, first of all, Richmond is the one A10 account that tags us whenever there's a triple nickel.
Yeah,
So
and
as
by
far
the
as
way,
I'm
they're really good at putting out highlights too, which so many of these accounts are awful at.
Yeah, so Richmond, as far as I'm concerned, they're the best A10 account, and it's not even close. LaSalle has occasionally tweeted videos and pictures of the smoke machine, so I feel like they're in on some of the A10 Twitter memes. The worst has to just be Fordham, because they have no graphics, they never tweet highlight videos. So if you're looking on information with the Rams, that's the last place you'd go, is the Fordham MBB account. I don't think it's close, it's Fordham.
Yeah, we'll retweet this when we put out the episode so it's easy to find. It's Fordham or Rhode Island who also doesn't tweet lineup graphics. But in terms of the actual graphics, it is actually LaSalle because it does just kind of look like an elementary schooler had a piece of construction paper and a really good glue stick. Like it's weird. The pictures like look like appear to be pasted on the back of this graphic. Which I guess maybe is kind of cool if you think about it, that someone found a way to like digitize artwork, but it's really clunky.
Kind of a major. That's fair. All right. That was a great question, though. We will retweet that so everyone can see it. Connor asked us, what team picked in the bottom half could legitimately be a top seven seed in the A10? So I think we already really talked about the two candidates. So I'll just ask you, who's it going to be, St. Bonaventure or Duquesne, if you had to pick one?
I'm more comfortable taking Duquesne right now. And there is one other one. I think Fordham is basically at the same exact level as last year. Like they look like an 8-9-ish team in the A10 to me. So they're basically right there. But yeah, it's Duquesne. And it's largely just, it's because of Grant. It's because they have maybe the best depth in the league, save for VCU. Whose
Yeah.
bench is also super, super talented.
I would have said Duquesne if this was a few days ago, but right now St. Bonaventure is the one with the marquee win. And until Duquesne or Fordham beat a quality opponent, I can't feel comfortable saying they're top half team. So
Yeah, and that's not going to happen till January because neither of them are going to play any.
yeah, so we'll see for now. I'm gonna say St. Bonaventure though. And then I think our last question of the night comes from Rogers, who asked us for updated predictions on our first team player of the year and rookie of the year. And I'll just start off by saying rookie of the year, no change. It's still Jason Nelson for me.
Rookie of the year with, I realize there's so many great dark horses right now. Like I talked about, like Jan Farrell, Barry Evans. Mike
RJ Lewis.
Scharfchomps actually has a way better chance now because
He
they
could.
literally might not have any other guards and he's going to have to play a ton. RJ Louise, definitely. I basically would have put him third right now. Jason Nelson, second. He's been the best rookie so far. But I have not seen one single thing so far this season to make me give up on Reed Bailey, who is, he started out really slow, but he is starting to put it together. He's only at 8 points a game right now. He had 20 against San Francisco the other day. I'd like to see him rebound more. Dude, you are 6'11". Can
Listed
you
as a
start?
guard, though,
Can
which
you,
is
yeah, but
hilarious.
can you start hauling in more than 2 rebounds a game? But it just the natural talent is incredible. When you look at the Davidson roster, there's no doubt that he is going to continue to get chances in the 30 minute a game range. I'm still taking him.
How about for player of the year? We all pretty much agreed it was Daron Holmes the second, but with him struggling on offense, I think it's a little bit more of a discussion now. And really, I've narrowed it down to two other guys. I had a whole thing prepared on the case for Yuri Collins during the second half of the game. And as soon as that lead evaporated, I had to think about it. It might be Foster Lawyer. It's one of those two guys for me. I feel like Foster Lawyer has carried Davidson a little bit more, where Yuri has more help. But St. Louis has also just been the better team so far.
Well, this is the football MVP versus offensive player of the year discussion. I think Foster Lawyer's the offensive player of the year. He's put up the most spectacular stats, but right now, until someone in this league proves to us that they're going to be better than St. Louis, it's Yuri Collins. Because St. Louis is clearly the best team at the moment. He is clearly their best player. And he's clearly one of the three-ish best players in the league right now. So if that trend continues, it's his award to lose.
Yeah, I think it's got to be Collins for now. Although I think it's very close, and I think if Davidson is a top four team, Lawyer's going to be right in the discussion. But if we're saying the best player on the best team, you can't go wrong
Yeah,
with
look,
Collins.
it's Yuri Collins' award unless someone unseats the Billikens at the top.
Yeah.
And if it's if it's someone like VCU, where maybe it's a little bit more of an ensemble than Fossil is in the discussion. But yeah, I mean, if Collins keeps doing this and they go 15-3, he wins the award no matter what else anyone else does.
Yeah, I think there's a good chance of that. And last but not least, the first team predictions, which I really haven't changed too much from
I haven't either.
the preseason. I've still got Collins and Lawyer, we just talked about. I still think Daron Holmes the second is a first team player. I actually don't think I initially had Tyler Burton on the first team just because I thought Richmond was gonna stink, and that looks like it's not true. He's having a great season and Richmond's playing pretty well too, so I moved him in. And my fifth spot, people need to settle down about VCU. I know they looked terrible against Kennesaw State,
They look terrible without Ace Baldwin.
Ace Baldwin's coming back. He's going to have a great conference season. And VCU, until they lose a bad game, is still a conference contender for me. So, yeah, I'm still leaving Ace Baldwin on the first team because, I mean, for me too, I look at what happens in conference play when we're figuring out these awards. And he's going to be back by then.
Yeah, I kept four of my five spots the same. Foster Lawyer. We don't even have to explain that. Ace, I saw the same thing with Ace Baldwin. Like, this team has sucked without him. And yet I'd still comfortably put them in the top four. That's how much I still believe in him. And he was pretty good before he went down. Daron Holmes, maybe he's not this triumvirate first team all conference player of the year, defensive player of the year we thought going into the year. There's still not anywhere near enough that's happened for me to feel comfortable taking him off that first team ledger, though. He's still awesome on defense. He's still one of the two or three best defenders in this conference. Still scoring 15 points a game. At some point, they're going to figure out how to get him better involved in the offense. And hopefully, at some point, just like I screamed about with St. Louis, what, an hour ago on this episode, he just needs to finish stronger. He's getting opportunities. If he starts to put that 15 pounds of muscle that he put on this offseason to work, he's going to be right there, just as we expected. Tyler Burton, I did have him on my first team. He is carrying Richmond right now. Despite the fact he's not shooting well from three, he's under 31% right now. That's going to straighten out. He's going to be in the high 30s the rest of the year. That's an easy one. And then I had Yuri Collins as my sixth guy going into the season. If we were trying to predict who the A-10 would put on the team, I would have put him first team. I did not because we acknowledged the rules of basketball. And so he got nudged out, and I gave the spot to Javante Perkins. But it's just everything I said on this episode about Yuri Collins, no need to rehash it. He should be up there. And right now, if we're predicting who the A-10 will put on, that sixth spot is wide, wide open. Especially if we don't know how good Perkins will be by the end of the season. Right now, I think the best
Oh
pick
no.
might be Tay-Tay
Oh
Bryant.
no. I knew it.
Well, where else are we going? Everyone else is putting up the same level of stats on
Yeah,
as him
could
is on a
be.
team that stinks.
I feel like you could put. I mean, what we know too,
It
there's
also could
almost
be Sam
definitely.
Enenga, by the way.
Oh, I know. I thought about him. We know by the end of the year, there's almost definitely going to be two players from one of the teams. Like, I don't know if there's going to be a second St. Louis guy and it ends up being Perkins or Mananga's a
Yeah,
good choice.
the problem right now is it's tough to find that second guy on Dayton, St. Louis, VCU.
Yeah, so we just don't know which team that's going to be. But I think by the end, that's almost definitely going to happen. But yeah, Mananga, don't sleep on him. He's averaging like 16 and
16
seven,
and
I think.
seven.
Yeah.
Him,
So.
it like everyone just keeps talking about how Foster Lawyer's carrying that team right now. It's Foster Lawyer and Mnenga. Mnenga's playing, having a hell of a season right now. And I feel like this was somewhere in the questions. We didn't talk about it at all. I still am easily predicting Davidson top four. I still feel great about that because their top two guys are top four caliber. They just need the rest of the pieces to start to figure it out. But Mnenga and Lawyer just flat out been awesome.
Well, I'm glad you bring Davidson up here because a question I wanted to ask you, and we can wrap it up with this. I think right now with Dayton having some injuries, we don't know the severity yet, but with them going 0-3 this week in St. Louis, playing well despite the loss to Auburn. I think pretty much anybody would pick St. Louis first right now in power rankings. Who do you have second? Because I feel like there's a lot of options. And even though I think just about everyone would disagree, they haven't looked that great. But I'm picking VCU and I'm not thinking very hard about it.
Well, wait, are we talking about who's been the best so far
No, I
or
mean, who's
like
finishing
predicting
second
right now?
place this year? If you're saying St. Louis is the best team, who's the second best team the rest of the way?
Yeah, it's VCU. I would right now, my top four at the moment, St. Louis 1, VCU 2, Dayton 3, because I am absolutely not punting on this team yet. I would rather look like an absolute moron leaving them up here than get burned when they turn things around the way they did last year. Because last year, everyone jumped off the boat. I'm not doing that. I didn't do it last year. I'm not doing it here. I'm leaving them three and then Davidson at four. Because Davidson has basically just kind of shown me exactly what I expected from them. They're 6-1. That one was horrible, but they're 6-1.
Yep. I think I'm swapping Davidson and Dayton, but yeah, pretty much agreed. I just think with Dayton, we don't know how they're gonna look. If Elvis and Smith are done for the year, that's gonna be much lower. If they're back in a
Well,
couple
I'm
weeks
saying
and
this
they're
under the
fine.
assumption that those
Yeah.
two will be back at some point.
Which I mean I would hope so, and we'll find out soon enough. I think the
And
other team, if we're throwing someone else in the top four discussion, I don't think they've even played in the last week, but UMass, we can't
yeah,
forget about them.
it's UMass, Richmond, Duquesne, Bonaventure. Maybe if they start to figure it out, Mason, all kind of lingering around
I am
below that.
absolutely, until they win a big game, I am absolutely out on Mason and Loyola. Like,
There's
I'm.
enough talent for Mason for me to say that they have to be mentioned in the next group, but I'd put them like 7th or 8th right now, if not lower.
Yeah, I mean, they just, I want to believe in them. I did in the preseason. I thought they had so much talent, but they've just got to show me something before I'm back on board. But with that, that's all of the Twitter questions. That was my only question. Anything else to wrap this one up?
Yeah, I just want to thank everybody again for the awesome mailbag
Oh,
questions.
yeah.
Not too much else to say about the games. Last week kind of went the same that the week before went. There was a lot of missed opportunities. Really weren't that many bad losses outside of Dayton just putting together back-to-back epic choke jobs, but everyone still continues to clean up against bad teams. And they're not beating the best of the best. So if that continues, then we're headed straight where this conference has been for the past few years, which is two bids. Because someone below St. Louis is going to figure it out. There's too much talent in the rung below them for someone to not figure it out in time to get an at-large bid, or at the very least, just simply knock off St. Louis in March. So, but there's still chances for things to improve here. One of the big ones, we'll see if VCU can get it done against Vanderbilt. I don't think Ace is supposed to be back for that, but you beat Vanderbilt and Pitt without him. Like that's about as much as you can ask for.
I think they beat Vandy on the road without him last year.
They did.
So,
They also did have Vince Williams, though.
yeah, that's true. But yeah, that'll be a big one. And just knock on wood with VCU, I'm still believing in them for when Ace comes back. I think they're going to be just fine. I know the Rams fans might not be enjoying the product on the court right now, but they still haven't lost a bad game. Arizona State's pretty good, and Memphis is really good, especially on the road.
Yep, we will see. But big thank you to everyone for sticking with us through this lengthy episode. If you've enjoyed the show, please give us 5 stars on iTunes and leave us a review on there. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at the number 3 Big League Pod. Although, if you have stuck around to listen to the end of this episode, you care enough about what we have to say that I assume you are already following us there. So, thank you again, everybody. Enjoy what's going to be a weird week of games. There's a lot of bye games. Hopefully, no one blows them. And we'll leave it with that.